Good morning. I call the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee meeting to order for January 24th, 2023. We have a quorum present. A quorum is present. We'll start first with approval of the minutes for January 19th. Rep. Hansen, would you like to move the minutes for January 19th?
I will.
Thank you. Rep. Hansen moves the approval of the minutes for January 19th, 2023. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the minutes are adopted. This morning, we have a little bit of conflict. So there is a Rules Committee meeting at the same time. So a few of our members will be at the Rules Committee meeting, and then will join us after, as soon as they can. We will begin today with a House Research Department and Fiscal Analysis Department overviews. And it is my understanding that we will start with Helen Roberts doing fiscal first, and then we will move to State Government with Matt Gehring, and then to Local Government with Chelsea Griffin. So with that, Ms. Roberts, if you would introduce yourself for the record and begin your overview. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Again, I'm Helen Roberts from the Nonpartisan House Fiscal Analysis Department. And just a reminder, and especially for new members, nonpartisan staff serve all the members of the legislature, and my department, as well as House Research, provides impartial and confidential services to the members. And as a fiscal analyst specifically, my duties are to track all of the budgetary decisions for this committee, to request fiscal notes for the committee, and basically to answer any questions on budget or fiscal issues that you might have. So to begin, I'm going to walk through, you have this handout with a couple pie charts, just to give you a really, really high overview of the accounts within this committee. The House State and Local Government Policy and Finance Committee appropriates the funding for and oversees the operations of several state agencies, boards and councils, the legislature, and constitutional offices. So beginning with this pie chart, the first pie chart is the general fund look at the accounts for this. And for this committee, the general fund appropriations make up less than 2% of the overall state general fund budget. And the things that I would like to point out here, when you're looking just at the general fund, you'll see Department of Revenue, the legislature, and the pension aides make up almost 70% of the general fund projected spending. And these numbers are based on the November 22 forecast. And these numbers will also be adjusted by the February forecast, but they will provide the starting point for any discussions of the target for this committee. Moving on to the next pages, you'll just see some quick, again, 10,000 foot level look at the forecast expenditures for the general fund for this committee. And I'm not going to walk through it line by line, but it does give you a sense of sort of the different groupings of agencies that are funded. You'll see the legislature, the constitutional offices, some of the major executive branch agencies, admin, MMB, minute services, and revenue. Then a variety of boards and commissions and councils. Some four occupational licensing boards. And then the retirement funds. And I know we have a couple members on this committee that are on the pension committee, so they would have heard some discussion about this yesterday morning. The pension spending that's in this committee is the direct aids to the major pension state pension plans. There is also aid that's carried in the tax committee that you may have heard discussed for related to volunteer firefighters, but this again is aids to the state plans. And then there's some quasi-state agencies that are included, the Historical Society, Humanities Commission, and then we also fund the public broadcasting grants through Department of Administration. So you'll see at the bottom of this the total forecast expenditures is just over $1 billion from the general fund. Moving on to the second pie chart, this is the all funds pie chart. And this shows a picture of the accounts under this committee's jurisdiction when we look at all funds, not just the general fund. And as I didn't mention this before, but many of the committee's large agencies like admin, MMB, revenue, provide services to other agencies. Minute is a really important one. And so that's what you see in this pie chart, that all of a sudden Minute and admin become a much bigger piece of the picture because they are providing services to other agencies through their non-general fund activities. So you have this pie chart, but that's not all. Moving on, because the pie chart only that I'm using the numbers from comes from the consolidated fund statement, which does not include what we call internal service funds or enterprise funds. And there's quite a bit of activity in our agencies that are characterized as either internal service funds and or enterprise funds. And you'll see on page 5 just some examples of those. This is not a comprehensive view of every internal service fund, but it just wanted to give you sort of a flavor. You can see in Department of Administration in particular, they have several different internal service funds that provide various services to state agencies. Minute Services, again, has their enterprise services to state agencies. And then another example is MMB oversees the state employee insurance program. So that's another really large amount of money. And then at the bottom of this page, I don't have numbers for it, but again, just want to provide some examples of other places where some of our agencies bill for services, provide services for other agencies, including, for example, the state auditor, whose audit services are reimbursed by local governments, and that offsets that office's general fund appropriation. The governor's office has interagency agreements for the governmental relations staff. Attorney General has partner agency agreements. So those are just some examples. And please, if you have any questions, I know I'm going through this really quickly, just stop me. Finally, at the last page, I have just listed some sources of additional information on state agency budgets. One I want to point out to you is what we call the agency profile pages on MMB's website. And pages provide just a lot of great detail on an agency's missions and services and the base budget information. For example, this is Department of Administration's alone. It's 125 pages. It gets into detail on all of their programs, provides you base numbers. At noon today, these are going to be updated with the addition of the governor's numbers, but I would recommend that if you have an interest in a state agency, this is a really good place to start. Coming soon will be a more detailed tracking sheet that I will update and am available to walk through it either with individual members or groups of members as if that's of interest. And finally, we have additional detail on the budget that the fiscal analyst can access through the budget planning system. So if anybody, again, if you have any interest in like digging into an agency more, just let me know and I can probably provide you additional information. And that's it, my summary, thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. And also you have provided a glossary of terms.
Yes.
And I would just like to, if you want to say something about that.
Yes, thank you. I'm not going to walk through this, but yes, this is a part of a publication. There's a bigger publication that our department does. And I will point out that we probably have the best acronym of anyone in any committee. If you look at the first one, I don't know how to pronounce that, but it's my favorite acronym for state council.
Thank you very much. I just want to thank you for your help, guidance, and assistance in a nonpartisan way. You are a wealth of information, and you have a great deal of knowledge, and I greatly appreciate that. Do members have any questions for Ms. Roberts? Okay, if not, thank you again. Really, I cannot say thank you enough for the help and guidance that you give to all of us at the legislature. Mr. Gehring, would you like to identify yourself for the record and begin?
Sure. Madam Chair, members, my name is Matt Gehring. I'm from the House Research Department. Just to talk a little bit about the way and role of my office relative to Ms. Roberts. House Research is sort of the policy nonpartisan office of the House, so my colleague Chelsea and I are both available to you for help with bill development, amendment drafting, bill drafting. You'll see our bill summaries in the committee packets when you have bills on the agenda, including today. You see, I think, two of Chelsea's summaries. We're also available just to talk through ideas if you have questions or ideas for a bill or amendment you might want to pursue, but you're not quite sure yet. We're sort of staff available to you, regardless of your political affiliation. We'll serve all of you in that sort of development role. So we're happy to be of service in whatever way it would be of use to you in your legislative work. All of us in House Research are assigned based on particular subject areas. So I handle state government operations. I handle elections and campaign finance, as well as redistricting policy. Chelsea will, when we get to her portion, she can explain her areas of jurisdiction. But just assume that any, no matter what your sort of issue areas of interest within the legislature, there is someone in House Research who's available to help you with that topic. We'll find the right person. If you don't know who to go to, and I know that sometimes that's sort of an issue, trying to figure out who the right person to ask is, you can always ask me, you can always ask Chelsea, and we'll make sure we get you to the right person, because it can be kind of confusing sometimes. So that's a bit about our office. I'm going to talk a little bit about the policy jurisdiction of this committee. Ms. Roberts talked about the finances and the accounts that are within the committee, and the policy jurisdiction is sort of related to those accounts. There is a memo in your packet with our House Research logo on the top that is a list of the state agencies that are within the jurisdiction of this committee. I'm not going to read through the memo for you specifically. It's just meant primarily as a resource for you. One of the things that members, particularly new members of a committee like this, often ask is where to find particular laws that govern the work of a state agency or a topic they're interested in. And so this memo is intended to sort of identify the agencies and also help you identify the statute. So if you want to go read up on the work of the Department of Administration, you can find the chapter of law that you would look to for that topic. Also within the memo, I've highlighted in a few sections, and I'll talk about these more at the end, a couple of areas where there are sort of recent policy changes that the committee might be interested in learning more about, including to the legislature. There's a couple of legislative auditor reports that I've noted in here that have been released more recently. So that information is also in the memo, and if you look at the electronic version of the memo rather than the hard copy, they should all be hyperlinked, so you can just click on the links there to find the reports that are being cited. So rather than reading through the memo, what I'm going to talk about more generally is kind of the way this committee is structured and kind of the jurisdiction of this committee, because it's a bit unique in the kind of structure of committees we have. So in most legislative committees, what you find is a relatively narrow topic area, and you, as a member of the committee, sort of become a really deep well of expertise in that topic area. So for example, transportation or public safety, something like that, you have really kind of one primary big agency, and you spend most of the session sort of really diving deep into the work of that agency and the way that they serve Minnesotans. State government is a bit different, because instead of being sort of a really deep well of expertise in a particular topic area, you're all expected to be and to have a really deep well of expertise on a variety of topic areas. So you are sort of generalist experts in a way in this committee. And depending on the way you sort of count or think about this, for me, I sort of think about it in sort of like four kind of buckets of types of policy work that you'll see come before you. So the first kind of bucket of agencies that will be of interest to you are the major state constitutional offices and functions of the constitutional officers. So the legislature, the office of the governor and lieutenant governor, the state auditor, the attorney general, and the secretary of state. These are all kind of the offices of state government that are established by the Constitution and perform specific functions and service for Minnesota through their constitutional functions. And all of those agencies are within this committee's jurisdiction. You've already heard from several of the constitutional officers. You'll hear more about the legislature later in session when you hear the legislature's budget proposal. All of those areas of work are within this committee's jurisdiction, not just for the accounts, but also for the policy work that they do. The one exception is, of course, Chair Freiberg has the Elections Committee, so there's policy work that's happening within the Secretary of State's office in his committee, but in general, state government is the home for the policy work of all the state constitutional officers. And then the second bucket of kind of policy area that is really the, in my view, is kind of the the sort of bulk of the policy work of this committee is the set of state agencies within your jurisdiction that really provide services to all of state government. This is where the title of the committee comes from. Within this bucket, I have the Department of Administration, which provides facilities management for all the state-owned property within the state. Department of Administration, in the way that it provides services, as it acts as a landlord for most state agencies. So if you're a different state agency, you're typically leasing your office space from the Department of Administration, who would act as your landlord. Department of Administration also facilitates state purchasing. So whenever a state agency has to enter a contract, they often work with the Department of Administration on making the purchase, and there's sort of a pretty robust body of law that governs how contracts are issued for state agencies and how they're bid out. And admin plays a central role in that. Department of Administration also has an office called SMART, which is an office that provides HR and accounting functions for smaller boards and commissions of state government. So they're providing that service out to other functions within the state enterprise. And admin provides fleet services and mail services. So all the kind of postal mail that comes to the executive branch gets sort of sorted through a facility at admin and gets sent out. So this, as Ms. Roberts said, there's ways that agencies sort of pay for these services to admin, but these are all, there's lots of other sort of smaller things that admin does, but really those are the big kind of major services that they provide to the full sort of complement of state agencies. Similarly, Minnesota Management and Budget, MMB, you'll be familiar with, is the finance-oriented agency of state government. So MMB is the agency that works on the state budget and provides accounting services for all the agencies and really is sort of the keeper of the accounts of state government. So when you hear of money being appropriated, it typically will have run through MMB in some capacity. Department of Revenue doesn't necessarily serve agencies directly, but they're the agency, of course, that's responsible for collecting revenue on behalf of the state, which then goes out. So in this committee's jurisdiction, you're not hearing about Department of Revenue in terms of tax policy, which is sort of the highest profile kind of thing that revenue does, but instead you're hearing more about the department's kind of operational side. So how do they go about and make those collections? How do they provide services? How do they receive tax returns from individuals and businesses in the state? All that sort of operational kind of administrative side of their agency is the types of issues you'll hear about in this committee. The Office of Minute Services, so Minute is the IT, enterprise IT agency for state government. Representative Bonner knows quite a bit about Minute. Representative Nash knows quite a bit about Minute. One of the things I highlighted in the memo is that there's a new legislative commission on cybersecurity that works closely with Minute. It's a commission of legislators that are sort of tasked with kind of keeping tabs on cybersecurity issues across state government. And Minute is really the sort of central agency that is responsible for making sure that state IT services not only have appropriate cybersecurity, but also just in general, they're the kind of IT services agency for executive branch agencies. And they're the biggest one. If you looked at Ms. Roberts' pie chart, you would see that Minute is really the biggest agency that charges out agencies for their services. So they don't necessarily have a big general fund appropriation that you'll see in this bill, but they do have a relatively big budget that comes largely from their billing to state agencies for their services. The Office of Administrative Hearings is another office that is, it's a relatively small office, but does have a pretty significant role within agencies. They help facilitate rulemaking proceedings as well as what are called contested case proceedings. So these are contested cases are situations where an individual might challenge an agency's decision or a policy choice that an agency is making in interpreting the law, and they would pursue what's called a contested case proceeding. And the Office of Administrative Hearings is an office with a set of what are called ALJs, administrative law judges, that help facilitate those disputes and help the agency come to a resolution. And then lastly, in this kind of services to state agencies budget, I included the Minnesota Historical Society. There's sort of some room for interpretation there, but I included them. You sort of hear about the Historical Society mostly because of the kind of historic preservation and kind of historic sites work that they do. But within state government, they're also the repository for the state archives and state papers. And so they really are providing that service to state agencies in addition to kind of the sort of public-facing role that they provide. And it's a really interesting area to learn more about. I would encourage this committee, if you are interested at some point, to go take a tour of the state history center, and particularly get a tour of the archives that they have in their building. So in the basement of the Historical Society, there's several floors of these sort of huge caverns of state papers and archives, and you can see things like blueprints from the Capitol and papers from previous governor's administrations, papers from previous legislators, all sorts of things that are sort of really interesting to see that relate to the work of state government. So that's kind of the bucket of things that I think you'll likely hear most about, and really you'll see the sort of most policy work come out of these types of agencies and their work. And then lastly, there's a set of what I call sort of small boards and commissions that are, it'd be unfair to say they have narrow constituencies, but they do have sort of a narrow mission and focus. So there's about 18 of them. The Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board, you all be familiar with as the agency you go to for campaign finance reporting. The State Board of Investment is responsible for investing state money resources. So they have investment strategies that they use that includes the state pension funds. The Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board is responsible for decisions related to development on the Capitol complex right here in St. Paul. There's three sort of gambling vices kind of entities that are within this community jurisdiction: the Gambling Control Board, the Racing Commission, and State Lottery. All relate to gambling in some respect, and they have sort of narrow responsibilities within that topic area. The Amateur Sports Commission is a commission that manages a number of facilities within the state that relate to sports leagues. The big one is the facility in Blaine that hosts soccer and hockey and all sorts of activities. There are three ethnic councils. They're sort of colloquially referred to as the ethnic councils that serve particular ethnic groups within the state. And then the Indian Affairs Council is another that sometimes gets lumped in with the ethnic councils, but they're really technically a different agency. They have a little bit broader jurisdiction. All of those groups are within the jurisdiction of this committee. The State Arts Board sort of shares jurisdiction with this committee, along with the Legacy Committee. The Minnesota Humanities Center, which you heard about last week, is part of this committee's work. And then lastly, there is a set of pretty small licensing boards that have very specific professional jurisdictions that you'll hear about: the Board of Accountancy, the Board of Cosmetologist Examiners, the Board of Barber Examiners, and then the acronym that Ms. Roberts loves, the Board of Architecture, Engineering, Land Surveying, Landscape Architecture, Geoscience, and Interior Design is the last licensing board that's within the jurisdiction of this committee. And then the final bucket that Ms. Roberts mentioned just briefly is the state pension plans. And so much of the policy of pension work comes through the Pension Commission that Representative Herr is chairing this year. The direct state aides, as Ms. Roberts mentioned, typically are sort of housed within the state government bill, and you'll see those numbers as we get closer to the sort of budget season for this committee. And Madam Chair, I think I'll end it there. As I said, there's lots of topic areas. All the things that I mentioned for the services for state agencies, we could do, you know, a whole hour kind of overview on each of the little functions that the agencies do. I won't do that today because there's just sort of too much to talk about, but I'm happy to be a resource either now or later if any members have particular questions on those areas of work.
Thank you, Mr. Gary. And it is my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because I know we moved a few buckets around, but it's my understanding that campaign finance is actually under the jurisdiction of elections this year. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair. Yes, I'm sorry.
Right. Thank you so much. I just want to make sure that was clear for the committee. Does anyone have any questions, concerns? No questions? No? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gehring. And Ms. Griffin, if you'd please identify yourself and educate us about local government, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chelsea Griffin, and I'm a legislative analyst with the House Research Department. So like Mr. Gehring and Ms. Roberts, I'm nonpartisan staff. I work with all 134 members of the House of Representatives. I staff local government issues for this committee. I also work on capital investment issues. So I staff the Capital Investment Committee. So there's a high likelihood that at some point you'll probably work with me as infrastructure needs occur throughout the state, local government needs occur throughout the state. So. It's very likely that you'll work with me at some point on a bill draft. So this morning I'm going to be covering at a very high level local government in the state of Minnesota. To be clear, this topic is extremely broad. It's extremely complex. There are so many different provisions, hundreds, thousands of provisions in the Minnesota statutes that pertain to local government. I really can't even begin to scratch the surface on this topic this morning. So. What I've done is I've selected three topics that I think are important for the committee to be aware of relating to local government. I'll cover them in brief. I also supplied the committee with three different publications that relate to the topics that I'm going to be discussing, and they're included in your packet. There's the State-Local Relations House Research Publication, the Special Legislation Publication, and please note that there's also a more lengthy Special Legislation Publication with House Research that goes more into the history of special legislation in the state. And then there's also the Minnesota Open Meeting Law publication as well. That one, it could be a particularly useful resource for you to share with local officials that may have questions about the open meeting law in your districts. So to start off, I'm going to cover how state and local governments interrelate. The term local government is a general term for governmental entities of the state that provide functions and services at the local level. This term usually refers to counties, towns, and cities, but it can be defined to include only some of those entities, so only counties and cities, for example, or to be more expansive, to include certain types of special districts, for example. It really just depends on how that term is defined for the purposes of the section that you may find it in. Another term that relates to local government is political subdivision. Political subdivision generally is a broader term than local government. It tends to include special districts when it's used, but it all depends on how that term is defined in the law to which it pertains. Local governments are creatures of the state. You'll hear that phrase when referencing local governments. Under the Minnesota Constitution, Article 12, Section 3, the Constitution provides that the legislature may provide by law for the creation, organization, administration, consolidation, division, and dissolution of local government units and their functions. That provision also goes on to describe how the legislature could change local government boundaries. It can decide what the qualifications are for elective and appointed offices at the local level. What this comes down to is that local governments possess only those powers that are conferred to them by statute or implied as necessary to carry out legislatively conferred powers. That's known as Dillon's Rule. Minnesota is a Dillon's Rule state. There are two modifications to that rule, though, that the legislature has made over time. The first one is Home Rule Charters. Home Rule Charters are provided for in Article 12 of the Minnesota Constitution. What a Home Rule Charter is it's a local constitution that provides for the governmental organization of a local unit of government and for substantive authority to be exercised by that governing body. There are limitations on Home Rule Charters. They do have to be consistent with the state constitution, and state law can overrule a charter provision. The second exception to Dillon's Rule is general welfare. So you'll hear about general welfare clauses for local governments. Those are broad grants of authority for a local government to exercise any power that's not enumerated specifically that contributes to the protection of the health, morals, peace, and good order of the community. Statutory cities and towns have this authority listed as part of their powers in the Minnesota statutes. Home rule charter cities can include a general welfare clause in their charter, or they could rely on the statute that allows home rule charter cities to use powers that are granted to statutory cities. Counties do not have a general welfare power listed in statute like cities and towns do. There is a provision that talks about county local ordinances that's sometimes viewed as providing a relatively broad grant of authority by authorizing ordinances protecting the public health. The second topic I'm going to cover for local government at a very, very high level is special legislation. Again, there's a special legislation publication in your packets today if you want to look into this further. The Minnesota Constitution prohibits special legislation with the exception of certain special legislation that relates to local governments. And the Constitution requires that those local laws be approved by the affected local unit of government. The Section 645.021 in the Minnesota statutes actually implements that constitutional requirement that special legislation be approved by the affected local government. So where you'll see this pop up in bills is the effective date on bills that affect that are a local law. So that effective date will read, this section is effective the day after the governing body of, and then whatever the name is of the local unit of government and its chief clerical officer timely complete their compliance with Minnesota statutes, Section 645.021, subdivisions 2 and 3. The way that the local approval requirement is set out in statute is that first it requires approval by resolution adopted by a majority vote of all members of the governing body with the law, and then that local unit of government has to file a certificate of local approval with the Secretary of State. And then generally that law is then effective after the local government files that required certificate with the Secretary of State. The local approval timeline for the local law is not indefinite. The local government needs to file that certificate of approval before the first day of the next regular session of the legislature. If they fail to do so, then the law is deemed disapproved by the local government unless provided in the special law. So there could be a circumstance where the local unit of government did not file that certificate of approval before the next regular session begins, and then that local unit of government needs to come back to the legislature to ask for that special legislation again. The final topic I'm going to cover relating to local governments, and this actually also applies to state entities as well, is the Minnesota Open Meeting Law. There is a publication in your packets that covers this topic in depth. The Minnesota Open Meeting Law requires that meetings of governmental bodies generally be open to the public, and the provisions are included in Chapter 13D of the Minnesota statutes. There is a separate law that applies to the legislature, which is Section 3.055. The case law has articulated three purposes of the open meeting law. The first is to prohibit actions being taken at a secret meeting where it's impossible for the public to become fully informed about a public board's decisions or to detect improper influences. The second reason is to assure the public's right to be informed. And the third is to afford the public an opportunity to present its views to the public body. Please note that there are some exceptions in the open meeting law where a meeting of a government body that is subject to the law may close the meeting. So some examples of that are meetings based on attorney-client privilege, labor negotiations, employee evaluations, and discussion of security issues. Madam Chair, that concludes the nonpartisan overview for this morning. We're happy to wait for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Are there any questions pertaining to local government? Thank you very much, and again, I appreciate the expertise that the three of you bring to the committee and the great work that you do for all 134 of us here. We couldn't do our work without you, so thank you very much for being with us every day and helping us along our way. Thank you very much. Next, we have Representative Cagle. Has she arrived? Oh, thank you, Representative Cagle. We are going to hear House File 283. We are giving this bill an informational hearing. Representative Cagle, welcome to the committee, and I'll ask that you please present your bill.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. So this bill is, so the little bit of background, the Rice Creek West Regional Trail runs 6 miles from Rush Lake along and Long Lake Regional Trail in Ramsey County to the Mississippi River in Anoka County. 2 miles of that trail are located in Ramsey County. The remaining 4 are in Anoka County in the city of Fridley. A 1.4-mile portion of the trail is located within the city of Fridley within three city parks, Lock Park, Plaza Park, and Lock Lake Park. The city of Fridley desires to take responsibility for planning and maintaining the regional trail portions located within these three parks. And with that, I will turn it over to Mayor Scott Lund.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mayor.
Mayor Fridley.
Thank you so much. Please identify yourself again for the record and begin your testimony.
Okay. Scott Lund, Fridley Mayor, and honored to be representing my community for now 23 years. So.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. Just a few comments. The city of Fridley is uniquely owns the underlying park property of approximately 99 acres on which the Rice Creek West Regional Trail is on. We contribute more than land than what is just the trail, about 100 acres or 99 acres. I think such a contribution over 40 plus years deserves a seat at the table with Met Council's Park and Open Space Committee. This would allow the city to have direct representation for its residents and the many, many visitors on that regional trail. My understanding has been that the county is neutral on this issue and would not oppose Fridley from seeking implementing agency. The city of Fridley is competent in being able to maintain this park and the regional trail asset. We can do the job, and our citizens are very supportive of it. We just passed a $30 million bond for redoing 28 of our 39 parks over the next 8 years. And our citizens.
Can you hold on just a moment?
Sure.
I realize you need to have a conversation, but with the audio, it will pick up on your microphone, and we want to make sure that the mayor's testimony can be heard. So please, if you just lower your voices, I would appreciate it. Mayor, I apologize for the disruption. Please begin. Please continue.
Okay, no problem. So our citizens are supportive. In terms of ability, we are no different than the cities of Bloomington and St. Paul, who are currently implementing agency. As mayor, I can tell you that I and the council are very committed to maintaining and advocating for the regional asset. In fact, our parks staff are already making plans for programming within that park, which is would be a new thing since we've taken it over just a couple months ago. With that, I'm open for any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you. And Representative Cagle, would you like to entertain questions at this time?
Sure. I do believe, though, that Anoka County is here.
There is another testifier. That's why I'm asking the question. We do have Mr. Perry. If Mr. Perry would like to come forward and testify. Welcome, Mr. Perry, if you'll begin, identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jeff Perry, Park Director for Anoka County. And thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. The county is in opposition to House File 283. The Metropolitan Regional Park System was established by the Minnesota Legislature back in 1974. Anoka County has been one of the 10 park implementing agencies since the inception in 1974. The other nine agencies include five metro counties, Dakota, Scott, Carver, Ramsey, and Washington counties, three cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the city of Bloomington, and one special park district in the way of Three Rivers Park District. For nearly a half a century, the Metropolitan Regional Park and Trail System has served the citizens of Minnesota and the Twin Cities metropolitan area by providing an abundance of opportunities for outdoor recreation, exercise, well-being, and natural resources conservation. I've recently met and conferred with all other of the nine park implementing agencies, And we collectively oppose House File 283, and let me provide the reasons why real briefly. Mm-hmm. Number one, the proposed legislation sets a very dangerous precedent of opening the door to over 180 other local units of government that may have the same interest to become an implementing agency. Number two, adding the City of Fridley to the list of implementing agencies does not grow financial resources available for the regional system. In fact, it does the opposite. It would further fragment the resources. Reason number three, the bill does not strengthen the Metropolitan Regional Park System. It diminishes the purpose of regionalizing the system, which is meant to serve the needs of a growing population in the metropolitan area and not the needs of one community. Reason four, Rice Creek West Regional Trail is currently supported by three parcels, as indicated by Representative Cagle and the mayor, that totals less than 100 acres. Typically, most regional parks in the metro area range from 200 to 500 acres. Reason five, throughout the regional park and trail system, local communities such as the City of Fridley work with the 10 regional park implementing agencies to support the park and trail system through in-kind contributions, funding matches, and other types of support. These partnerships work without such an extreme solution that the City of Fridley is proposing in this particular bill. And then lastly, the local units of government are typically the city park systems. Their role is a little bit different than the regional systems. They deliver local recreational needs, particularly those that serve the neighborhoods for more active play rather than natural resource-based recreation and passive use recreation. The county is currently working on a long-range plan for this section of Rice Creek West Regional Trail that traverses east to west through the entire city of Fridley. And this planning effort offers meaningful opportunity for the city to participate in that planning process for the future of this trail to best serve the citizens, not only in the city of Fridley, but the entire metropolitan area. In conclusion, Madam Chair and members, I would just kind of like to leave you with an analogy of the scale of what this bill is proposing. So the regional trail system is 415 miles in length. So if you were to start the trail right here, you could take it all the way to downtown Chicago. And the city of Fridley's portion that they're proposing in this particular bill would get you from right here out to 35E. That's the scalable segment that they're proposing to become a regional park implementing agencies. The rest of the 10 agencies take it from 35E all the way down to Chicago. Thank you again, Madam Chair, and members, for the opportunity to testify here in opposition to House File 283. And I stand ready for questions at your discretion.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. Is there anyone else here who would wish to testify in favor or in opposition or neutral to the bill before us? Okay. I see no one. So let's move to member questions. Representative Nash, I have you first on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier that's there, now, I didn't get your name. Mr. Perry. Thank you, Mr. Perry. And maybe I misheard this, but I was told that the county was neutral or open to this, and it sounds like that's very much not the case.
Madam Chair,
Representative,
that is correct. The county is not in support of this bill.
Okay. And Madam Chair?
Excuse me just one moment. Mayor, if you would like to just pull a chair and then sit with Representative Cagle, that would be fine. Thank you very much. One moment, please. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess to the author, how long has the agreement that has been referenced been in place, known about, and in effect?
I can answer that. The Joint Powers Agreement.
Excuse me.
42
Mayor,
years.
Mayor, please. Oh. Please proceed.
Well, oh, thank you. Sorry, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. 42 years that we've had the Joint Powers Agreement, which stipulated that for without cause or reason that either party could void that, and the city of Fridley did so back a couple months ago. There's a one-year notice that also calls for, so.
Representative Cagle, is there anything you would like to add? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm going to put my former mayor's hat back on. When I lived in Waconia, or I still live there, I haven't moved. When I was the mayor of Waconia, the city's parks were owned and funded by the levy that was done in Waconia, and we factored that into our funding problems. I'm struggling to see how a 42-year joint powers agreement now has been voided, with apparently because you just can't afford the park. I certainly understand that there's difficulties in funding and that there's pressures that you might undergo, but it doesn't seem to me to rise to the level of going to where you're trying to get to, and with the ultimate dilution of other regional park funding, just seems very much out of place. And I'm glad that this is an information-only hearing, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the conversation that we had yesterday about our joint questions about this. Yeah. But I just think, Madam Chair, that seems to me that this should not rise to a bill that we move on. Grateful that it's an information-only hearing, because it does seem problematic to both myself and my members. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, but I think there's I'm confused, Representative Nash, by your statement. I believe the city of Fridley said that they are capable of taking on this financial responsibility, and would you like to say something about that, Representative Cagle?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I know that Fridley wouldn't go into this lightly. So the mayor and I met over the interim, and they laid it all out for me. And so I think this is something that Fridley can do, but I also have spoken with the Parks Commissioner here and Mr. Perry, and so I am committed to working this out, making sure that both my city's needs are met while, you know, making sure the county is on board too. And so I think this is kind of a unique little park. If anybody has ever seen the Mighty Ducks 3 movie, it was filmed in that arena where it kind of runs through. I only know that because I was an extra there. So so it's kind of fun to actually be able to represent the city now. And so I do think that Fridley is able to take this on. And when I was door knocking the community of Fridley this year, I was actually really impressed with how robust the park system was. I was door knocking around on 7th Street. They were laying a new sidewalk, which I greatly appreciate. And then the park was just filled with people. And one of the women that I knocked on her door was this little old lady, and she goes, "Oh, I just love hearing all the screaming and yelling and kids playing across the street." And so our parks are used. I think they're really unique, and I want to make sure that the city is, you know, getting what we want out of our park system.
And just to be clear for those who might be listening, with redistricting this year, Fridley is a new addition.
Correct.
For you as a representative, is that correct?
Yep.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hewitt, you have a question?
Madam Chair, I a couple of questions. Well, not questions, but Mr. Perry, I come from a South Metro district that has the Minnesota Zoo, that has Dakota County, that has every one of our cities down there is making investments into the trail system, so they're continuous. So you don't go from Rosemount to Apple Valley and you go from pavement to a dirt trail or whatever. I'm real curious, because I think part of this, maybe the communication broke down. How involved are the cities right now in what happens within their city on some of these trails, and is that not happening? Is that why this ended up happening, that, you know, they weren't part of this planning process? Because it sounds like they have a big request here, and they definitely want to attract people to their area, but wouldn't that be also your role as the county to come in and help with that? I mean, to make sure they're part of the say of what happens here? Am I heading down the right track here? Or?
Mr. Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hewitt. Yes, we work with all of the local cities, typically through joint powers agreements, on the relationship of the ownership of the trail and the maintenance, operations, and management of the trail. And that's what's been occurring with the city of Fridley since 1980. And in 2021, the city approached the county to work together with updating the joint powers agreement, as well as updating the master plan for the Rice Creek West Regional Trail. So conversations began in 2021. We've included the city of Fridley throughout the master planning process and the joint powers negotiation process. Communications have broke down, and expectations that the city perceives that the county should be doing on 1.25 miles of trail, they have one perspective, and the county has a different perspective. We treat that section of trail very similar to the rest of the 100 miles of regional trail that are, you know, spread all across Anoka County. And these city relationships are vital to the success, as you had indicated, Representative Hewitt, that, you know, you can't do it alone. You have to have city partners to make these trails successful. And this particular trail is very heavily used. It's 350 to 400,000 visits per year throughout the entire section. And Anoka County has, in good faith, I can assure you, tried to work through these issues with the city of Fridley, but we came to a stalemate, and I think that's the impetus of the city's desire to terminate the joint powers agreement, and then subsequently to pursue becoming an implementing agency.
Representative Hewitt, did you have a follow-up?
One, Madam Chair, I know we got some time going in here. So, Madam Chair, Mr. Mayor, it's kind of, I'm kind of surprised, because I know working with my cities, or, and you have a beautiful city, I've been there, my wife and I go to dinner there once in a while. I suppose this frustrates you, because you're going to have to take money out of the city budget now to deal with this, or to go get bonding or whatever, which is always marginal, right? So, I mean, wouldn't it be better to try to work this out? I mean, it just seems like an option versus a state bill.
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Hoyt. Yes, you would think so. And the city of Fridley actually implemented 3 meetings with the county that we hosted, and basically were stonewalled. And after 42 years of a joint powers agreement and getting virtually nothing, and if you read the joint powers agreement, there's 10 items that clearly states the county would do these items. None of them have been done in 42 years. So I think we've given them a lot of time and a lot of discussion, and nothing good is coming from it. So we decided to take our control of our property. So I didn't really want to bring all this up, because it's negative. I think we have a right to ask for implementing agency. Certainly, as Mr. Perry says, that the one they're all opposed, well, that's because they're being selfish. They don't want another implementing agency paying for those same dollars. So, but we would be asking for some maintenance money. Certainly, it's going to cost us money. We're willing to take that on. We have committed to having this regional trail system in here. Mr. Perry brings up the point how minute this little section is in comparison to the length that you can virtually go all the way to Chicago. My point, what I got from that is the fact that this is it's inconsequential, that they don't care, and they haven't for 42 years. So Mr. Nash is opposed to it. Can't probably change your mind, but it's because it's come to this extremeness of having to cancel that thing, so we have some say and control in our park.
All conversation comes to the chair.
Sorry.
Yep. Thank you. Next we have Representative Kosnick. You had a few questions.
Thank you. I have, I think, 2 questions and a lot of the discussion, and I know that this is informational, but it's always good to see the friendly mayor from Fridley here. But first off is, how did, if either the author or maybe research could help me understand, how St. Paul and Bloomington were able to become implementing agencies, because the rest are mostly county entities, and then a rather large park board, two kind of large park boards. So how did 2 cities get in there, and then now we're looking to add 3?
Thank you.
Is there some history or context for that, yeah. Madam Chair?
We'll keep it limited just so that we can answer the question before us.
Madam Chair and Representative Klosnick, I didn't do a thorough review of the statutory history for this provision. I can look at that if that would be helpful to you.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Representative Klosnick.
Thank you, and I guess I would be interested because that's kind of the context of what I think is being proposed in the author's bill. And as was stated, my concern would be that there are so many cities in the metro area that would like to probably get some additional funding for their city parks, and that would probably be a very good discussion to have in the committee and would raise a lot of questions. So I think that's probably why we're doing this on an informational basis then. Mr. Mayor, like I said, appreciate when you're up here at the Capitol and good to see you. You'd answer the question of, you know, the actual advantage is of being an implementing agency is that your city would now receive additional funds. But in this pool of money, it's taking away funds from other regional park systems, of which are in my community and district that I represent, but so we're not expanding the pool of dollars. And so I think it might be good to kind of work this out in a friendly manner and maybe come up with a better option here. But I appreciate the efforts of the author and the mayor, and appreciate Mr. Perry being here as well.
Thank you, Representative Klosnick. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Perry, Commissioner Perry. Question I have is, so up in my district, we're working on Heartland Trail, and it's collaboration with counties, cities, and I'm a former mayor as of December last year, 6 years. I keep hearing across the board we haven't been able to work for 42 years. Is that what you've seen, too, on your side? I would imagine in 42 years you guys probably have changed seats at local levels. And I guess I'm just surprised, and I guess I'd like some background on that. And then I'd like some background of how many other cities are you guys seeming to have this challenge with, too, if you could. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joy. And I will just say we don't want this to be a confrontation. So if you would just speak, Mr. Perry, as to meeting requests and avoid personalities, I would appreciate that. Thank you. Please proceed, Mr. Perry.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. The past 42 years, I can speak to the past 27 years of my tenure at Anoka County, and not until 2021 were any issues brought to the county. So from 2021 to present day, we started working through some issues that the city brought to the county's attention. And to the second part of your question, Madam Chair and Representative, is we have 21 various local units of government that we work with throughout our regional park and trail system. And we have a presence in each of those 21 jurisdictions, and we have relationships with all 21 local units of government. And I would say, by and large, all of those relationships are positive in working together for shared goals to serve the public the best that we possibly can.
Thank you. Representative Cagle, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think, you know, this is kind of a unique situation. The city actually owns the park. And there is a there's actually the new city hall is there, public works, a nice big kind of amphitheater area out the back, and then you go to the dog park and the regional trail, and it doesn't really match the beautiful park that we have right behind our city hall. And you can literally, you know, take that trail from the city hall to those regional parks, and so. You know, this is just really this. The city owns the property and feels it can do a better job of maintaining it, and so I think that's really just where they're coming from. But like I said, you know, I'm committed to working on this and making sure that we come to a resolution that both the county and the city can live with.
Thank you, Representative Joy. You had a quick follow-up.
Just real quick, Madam Chair. Say, you know, being a mayor, I sure hope you guys can fix this at your level. I mean, to fall to our level, I mean, to me is. Again, too much big government. Local government needs to work this through. and we all create a plan that's a 10-year planning or 20-year or 5-year outlook. So you knew what was coming. So where your park was built, you knew this was coming, and I would encourage you guys to get that worked on your level. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'm assuming you knew this was coming. It was addressed to both parties, and we're not attacking anyone.
No, I'm not attacking nobody, Madam Chair. I'm just saying when we do our plans for our cities and we know how far our cities are looking for trailers, like the Heartland Trail.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Joy. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just have a general comment. Is that the regional park system is part of Met Council's plan. And it would seem to me that rather than coming to the legislature, you'd be better off resolving this by going to Met Council and talking to the council. And I don't know if there's anyone from Met Council here, but it would be interesting to see their perspective.
Thank you. Representative from Met Council is in the audience. And Mr. Perry, thank you for offering the seat. If you would please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Lisa Barajas. I'm the Executive Director of Community Development at the Metropolitan Council.
All right, Representative Newton, would you like to ask your question?
Yes. I'll just repeat what I'm saying. It seems to me that this is a Met Council issue, that it has to do with one of your regional parks. And is there some mediator or some organization in Met Council that would deal with this?
Thank you. If you'd please proceed with your answer.
Madam Chair, Representative, we certainly support our implementing agencies and local governments and working out issues amongst themselves. We support them in network and provide, as you know, as a long-range planning agency who works with local governments on comprehensive planning as well as doing the long-range planning for the regional park system. That coordination is really important, and so we certainly support both the city and the county finding a resolution that continues to support the regional trail system as it goes for Fridley, as well as meeting local requests for additional programming and such. And certainly we have a lot of examples from around the region where cities and implementing agencies have worked together to resolve those issues and co-share in management and programming in different parts of the regional park system. So we definitely would support that and have been participants in conversations over the years with both the city and the county to support that resolution.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your work at the Met Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just think that this is not the right venue for us to be resolving this, that it should be through Met Council and the park system, regional park system, is their purview. And I don't think we should be dealing with this here.
Thank you, Representative Newton. Representative Nash, we have another one of your members. Do you want to go last?
I'll go last.
All right. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for bringing this bill forward, Representative Cagle. I think it exposes some of the challenges that local gov, and I recognize the frustration that is seemingly coming from the mayor and the city. When we look at these regional, pieces of infrastructure that have so many partners, they have some from a funding standpoint, from a maintenance standpoint, who acquires them, who maintains them, and ensuring that, you know, that we're getting along while we do this. I happen to come from an area where there's, you know, there's literally 8,000 acres, two separate, very large regional park districts in my city. And I've been there forever, and it's always been a challenge, but we've always come back to the point where, you know what, we have to work together on these things. And I agree. I mean, I think there's a huge difference between the city of Fridley, if we look at population, we look at spending, we look at budget, you know, we look at these things between that and the other implementing agencies. That's a jump for me. So I would only suggest that you take this and go back and really try to bring an oak out of the table and say, let's figure out a path through. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And hold on to your hats. Representative Newton and I are going to agree here.
Yay. See that bipartisan
work? Yeah. Write that down. You might want to journal that.
I have it.
This is not the venue for this, and I think that as we look at what problems rise to the level of having a legislative fix, this is not it. Again, putting my former mayor hat on, and there's a lot of us here that have local government experience. Certainly when I was in Waconia, we would have put this into one of our long-range plans to begin accumulating money to handle whatever might come out of a result of staying in a joint powers agreement or breaking up on a joint powers agreement. This is not something that the legislature should be fixing, and I've heard that from more than just a handful of us around this table, and I think that I would just encourage the two parties to figure it out, because again, when we went through negotiations with some of the adjacent townships when I was mayor, you could either throw rocks at each other or you could sit down at the table and figure out how to get this done. It just seems to me that this makes more sense to head back home, schedule a meetings, talk through this, because this doesn't have, I don't know that this would have the support to get out of committee. So I think that's a pretty clear indication that you should figure this out locally. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think the thing that is kind of being lost in this conversation is that Fridley is asking to be an implementing agency because they want to make sure that they're abiding by the regional plans and working within the Met Council structure so that they are a good partner across those kind of levels, I guess. And so I think that's really, you know, Fridley wants to do the maintenance and wants to be part of that regional plan because, you know, they want to make sure that their interests are represented. And so I think that's just, you know, one of the things that's being lost in the conversation. And so I'd like to make sure that we think a little bit about that. And so, yeah.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. And as someone who supports local control wherever we can, I appreciate you bringing the bill forward. We are laying it over so that you have time to continue your work and your conversations. And please know that if you need to come back, we are here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, if I might be able to make one final comment.
Excuse me, one moment. Representative Cagle, would you like continued conversation?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Madam Mayor. Chair. Please proceed.
I just want to tell you that we have done this. What the term that I would use all the time is partnership, and in this case, the city with the county. That's a moot question at this point. We have canceled the JPA, and the seeking implementing agency is because we don't have any say in what the county does or doesn't do. They are planning a master. They're redoing their master plan. They're again not encouraging us in. And asking for our take on it, and they don't have to abide by anything that the city offers. They want to do it through the county has complete control over it. We've taken back the control of our park.
Thank you, Mayor. I misspoke. I want to make sure I'm clear for the record. This was an informational hearing, and I misspoke. So this is an informational hearing. Thank you for bringing this forward. I look forward, Representative Cagle, to our future conversations on this matter.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Representative Nash, for catching that for me.
I'm here for you.
Partnership, I love it, all over the place this morning. Thank you. Our next bill will be Representative Freiberg, House File 159. And this one is to be laid over. Representative Freiberg, thank you for bringing this bill forward, and I'm going to lay this over for possible inclusion. If you would please present your bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This bill deals with what I hope will be a more agreeable topic than the intense topic of Metropolitan Park implementing agencies, the topic of local government investment authority. House File 159 is a bill that offers a broader number of local government entities that meet certain qualification criteria to broaden their choices for investments. A similar bill was advanced in 2022 with bipartisan support in both the House and Senate, and it was included in the ill-fated state government finance supplemental budget bill that failed to become law. Currently, cities and counties have a limited number of investment options, such as U.S. Treasuries and certificates of deposit from banks that are FDIC insured. These investments work well for short-term investments, but do not work as well for long-term investments, such as when a city is setting aside long-term capital funds to pay for replacing a water treatment plant. The fixed income investments have not kept up with inflation for over a decade. The result is these local governments are falling behind financially. In 2017, the legislature recognized this issue and enacted a law that allowed cities and counties over 100,000 in population, local government insurance pools, or those governments that have a AAA bond rating, to invest a small amount, 15% of their cash and savings, in equities or stocks, but only through a U.S. broad market equity fund. This allows those qualifying local governments more choice to invest their cash for long-term obligations and projects and to keep up with inflation while ensuring that risk is minimized. The bill has two parts to expand on the 2017 legislative action. Sections 1, 2, and 3 would allow cities with their debt rated at AA or higher to invest in the same options that's currently available to AAA cities and counties under the 2017 law change. This is a matter of fairness to smaller cities, some of which do not have sufficient financial obligations to be able to obtain a AAA bond rating. AA-rated cities typically have a separate finance department and oversight from a third-party auditor to ensure compliance. And I'd like to draw your attention to a letter in your packet from Robbinsdale Mayor Bill Blonigan that's in support of this provision. Mayor Blonigan hoped to be here today to speak in support of this provision but was unable. Section 4 would clarify and allow local government insurance pools, including the League of Minnesota Cities Insurance Trust, that provide property insurance and workers' compensation insurance to many local governments, to invest in the same type of investments that the state of Minnesota invests in through the State Board of Investment. The local government insurance pools have longer-term investment horizons because their payouts are longer-term. In addition, the local government insurance pools have outside investment advisors and a board who set clear investment guidelines. This provision was in a bill chief authored by Representative Albright last year. With me to testify is Gary Carlson from the League of Minnesota Cities, and I hope members will look favorably upon this legislation.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Mr. Carlson, if you'd identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorne and members of the committee. My name is Gary Carlson. I work with the League of Minnesota Cities. We represent 837 of the state's 854 cities, and I think our largest non-member city is under 120 or 130 population. Representative Freiberg did a wonderful job of explaining the bill. This is really the compilation of two bills that were discussed last session. Number one was a bill that he authored on behalf of Mayor Blonigan that deals with the AA credit-rated cities and counties. The other bill was Representative Albright's bill that dealt with the League of Minnesota Cities Insurance Trust, the County's Insurance Trust, the Township Insurance Trust, and the School Board's Insurance Trust. Those trust funds are established to provide insurance services for their members. Our insurance trust provides workers' compensation and property casualty insurance for those members that choose to insure through us. I think right now we have more than 820, 830 cities that choose to insure with us. That does not include the largest cities like Minneapolis, St. Paul, and several others that also self-insure. So. The reason on, especially on this, the piece of the bill related to the insurance trust investment authority, we did decide to carve that out and create a separate subdivision for clarity purposes in this bill. You can see that it appears as a new subdivision, but it really is meant to make it easier for people to understand this expanded investment authority. Also, what is included in the bill is a reference to Minnesota Statutes 11A.24. That is the statute that governs the State Board of Investment Authority. The reason we are looking for the longer term horizon and the broader investment authority for the insurance trusts is that we have seen a dramatic increase in the number of long-term workers' compensation claims, especially those related to post-traumatic stress disorder. And many of those claims can be 20 or 30 or even 40-year payouts, depending upon the horizon upon which that individual was injured in the line of duty. And so the longer-term investment horizon gives us the ability to realize much better returns on our investment over a longer period of time, thereby reducing the cost to taxpayers of covering those long-term insurance claims. So, Madam Chair, we support this bill. We support, agree with Mayor Blonigan on the AA credit-rated cities. That would add, I think right now we have about 30 AAA credit-rated cities that are eligible for the 118A.09 investment authority. This would increase that to between 80 and 90 cities. I don't have the county numbers in front of me. I don't have all of the credit ratings from the three major credit rating agencies at my disposal at all times. So, Madam Chair, I would stand for any questions, but we do support the bill.
Can I just ask one quick clarifying question? So when you're saying by allowing this bill, we would increase 60 more cities could prevail themselves. You said up to 90. So I just want to make sure we're talking about 60, potentially 60 more cities.
Madam Chair, that is correct. Our estimate is that there would be about 60 additional cities that would be eligible. I mean, a good example just before you, before me testifying today was the County of Anoka. I believe they are a double A, maybe a double A plus credit rated county. City of Fridley is a double A or a double A plus rated city. So both of those would then be eligible under sections 1, 2, and part of 3 for the expanded investment authority with the State Board of Investment or in index mutual funds.
Thank you very much. Mr. Massman, I believe, is also here to testify. Oh, excuse me, Massman. Forgive me. If you'd please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Cleburne. Matt Massman, Minnesota Inter-County Association. MICA represents 15 of Minnesota's larger and faster-growing counties, including 4 metro and 11 greater Minnesota counties. And I'm testifying this morning in support of House File 159 also, and I want to thank Chair Freiberg for introducing the legislation again this year. The bill has been well explained, obviously, by Representative Freiberg and Mr. Carlson. I would just add a little bit of county flavor to our support for this legislation. In 2017-18, our association was actively participated in enacting this long-term equity investment, and the impetus for that original authorizing legislation is still the same today as it was then. Counties, local governments are required to recognize and plan for long-term liabilities such as post-employment benefits, environmental exposure such as landfill care trusts, and compensated absences. And as those long-term balances have accumulated, the managing governments are understandably seeking sensible options for enhancing investment earnings. One example that I'll share, a county in our membership that strongly supports this legislation, Rice County, has a population of 67,000, so they just fall under that 100,000 threshold, but would have the AA rating. They own, operate a closed landfill, and so they are required to set aside funds for post-closure costs that might be needed decades down the road, but they're unable, despite intensive efforts to try and maximize the returns in that investment or in that fund, can garner approximately about 2% has been their history. And so this would allow local governments like Rice County the opportunity to get better returns for their taxpayers, frankly, for their funds to help pay for these costs and potentially offset things like tipping fees that go into those funds as well and still cover the costs that'll come forward. So House File 159 would allow the jurisdictions under 100,000 with the AA rating, and I apologize, I don't have the number of counties in front of me that would have that rating. But current statutes, I would just add, as has been highlighted, already provide a number of important guardrails that would continue to apply in terms of requiring the transparent action by the governing bodies, adopting a resolution and investment policy, limiting the types and amounts of funds that can be used, as is in the legislation and been testified to, and limiting the equity instruments that are allowed. So in short, we believe House File 159 allows for prudent investment of long-term reserves that will improve the jurisdiction's financial position consistent with those safeguards, and we support the legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Massman. Is there anyone else here who would like to testify on this bill? Anyone else from the public? All right, questions to the members. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can somebody give me, there's two parts to this thing. I'm gonna stay with the first part first, and maybe the question is for Mr. Carlson. Can you give me a history, Mr. Carlson, or if the author knows too, that's fine. How long has it been since this has been modified, the definition of a qualifying government that would be eligible to invest up to 15% of its
you know, unfunded, or it's unrestricted fund balance. How long has that been the case? And what was the rationale that that was put in place to begin with? And what do cities, I'm sorry, I'm wrapping this all in one. What do cities that don't meet this threshold? I see that if we expand it, we get 90 cities. That's great. There's 854 cities. There's 1,700 townships. There's 87 counties. Why? How do we make this work for more people rather than just the next 90?
So, Representative Nadeau, I hear you asking the two questions: updated the statute, and then what do cities do who don't qualify?
Yes.
Are those the two questions?
Yes, please.
All right, Representative Freiberg.
Thanks. I can maybe take a first stab at it. So, I believe the update happened in 2017 that allowed cities, local units of government of over 100,000 people, or ones with a AAA bond rating, to have these additional options. Prior to that, it was only, you know, government securities and very low interest bearing vehicles. Mr. Carlson can probably talk a little bit more about the impetus for that change. But I view this as just, you know, we've had that in place for a few years now. This wouldn't be a full expansion of it. As you mentioned, Representative Nadeau, there's, you know, 800 cities. This would expand it to maybe from 30 to 90 or thereabouts. You know, we've had this in place now for a few years. We've seen that it works well. This is a way to expand it to some additional cities that we know are on sound financial footing as well. But I think maybe Mr. Carlson might have a little additional background on the 2017 change.
And then the question of what do cities do if they don't qualify?
And Madam Chair, Representative Nadeau, very good questions. Representative Freiberg was right. It was 2017 when we first sought this authority. The cities and counties came together to seek this additional authority. At that time, just a little bit of background, there was discussion of extending this to a broader array of jurisdictions. It was caution. I mean, when we're dealing with Chapter 118A, we're dealing with the investment of public funds, and I know that the legislature and even our cities and counties are always very cautious about how we can invest those monies, making sure that we don't risk the taxpayers' funds to function. So at that time, although the legislature discussed a broader array of entities being qualified, they settled on the AAA credit rated and the largest cities and counties by population size as I guess I would almost say it was a test to make sure that this would be an authority that could be used and would prove beneficial.
Thank you.
In terms of what other jurisdictions do, I think Representative Freiberg indicated that generally we're restricted in Minnesota to fairly conservative investments that are very low yielding investments by their very nature. They're very safe, but they're also very low yielding. And so many cities during the last decade found that when their return on their invested assets was diminishing with the interest rates, they began looking for other investment vehicles. And that was really the genesis of the 2017 law change that did affect at least a handful of cities and counties.
We have seven minutes left. I know you have a follow-up, but if we can allow someone else to speak and then come back if we have time.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Freiberg, my concern here is on conflict of interest and what happens. You know, I'm assuming that if a city council is going to go with a firm for investments, that there would be disclosure if any members of the council have similar investments, or if there's contact with the firm. What are the protections to prevent against conflict of interest? I mean, just with this, because I have concerns.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Freiberg.
I think I might turn this over to Mr. Carlson. I didn't prepare on local government disclosure requirements.
Mr. Carlson.
And Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, I'll have to get back to you on that. I know that the investments that cities make would be generally in, I know Mayor Blonigan, when he was talking to me about his piece of the bill, especially on the AA credit rated jurisdictions, he was looking to the State Board of Investment as the investment authority that he wanted to invest with for the city of Robbinsdale. That is one of those two options, and that would clearly not have a conflict of interest given that the State Board of Investment is independently run. I think that their fund that is available for equity funding for cities is run by one of the larger Wall Street firms. I cannot remember off the top of my head which firm that is, but we can get back to you with more information.
Thank you very much. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I have similar concerns as Representative Hansen. It was kind of looking along that lines. There's an omission on line 2.8 of previous legislation, but it's kind of added in above that. Can you explain why, what the significance of that is? In subsection 2, it's the index mutual fund investment must be made directly with the main sales office. But then it looks like it's added in on line subdivision or item one above that.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes, I believe that was just cleanup language. It didn't really make sense in reference to the State Board of Investment, so it was put in the proper place, but Mr. Carlson can confirm that.
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, that's correct. In looking at the 2017 law, we realized it was rather incorrectly drafted, and that clause should have been referencing index mutual funds and not the State Board of Investment.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kosnick.
Well, thanks for clarifying that, and I was just had similar concerns of conflict of interest type and where the investments are purchased through. So I presumed it was to kind of save fees. But also on line 3.17, I appreciate that it does mandate that there must be an investment policy resolution. Have you discussed or thought of the fiduciary responsibility like the State Board of Investment has to have the highest and best return for the stakeholders? There's a popular trend in ESG type investing that may even divest from Minnesota industries, particularly mining I'm thinking of. That would be a concern to me, and if that's a concern to any members here, I have a bill for that that I'd love to have your support. But if you given consideration of that, does that come into play? Maybe Mr. Carlson might know with current entities that are able to participate in this since 2017.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Mr. Carlson.
Chair Cleavorn and Representative Kosnick, we haven't talked about any ESG type investment restrictions or overlays on this. This was really meant just to give some additional authority. The sections you're referring to is generated or really affects the four insurance trusts run by the local units of government or the four statewide local government associations. And I've not heard any discussions of any sort of ESG types of investment criteria.
Thank you. We have two more members who wanted to speak, and we have 3 minutes. Representative Bonner, quickly, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Freiberg, and to our testifier. I certainly understand the value of wanting to look at long-term options to make sure that we can secure those funds for the long term. You had mentioned that we actually did this in 2017, where we allowed certain cities to do this. Do we have any indication or any data on how those cities have performed during that time? I know the market is a little bit volatile right now. So I think, being that these are monies of the public trust, I'm curious if we have any data on how things have been going and what that might look like as an indicator for future.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, Representative, the only city that I know that has used the State Board of Investment option is the city of Woodbury, and I don't know how long their investment has been in place. I do have some information from the State Board of Investment's non-pension asset that cities can invest in if they choose this option under 118A09. In the most recent quarter, so this would be quarter four of 2022, the quarterly return was 7.54%. The one-year return, this is a little eye-popping, was negative 18%. The three-year return was 7.66%. So if you even factoring in that bad 1 year, the three-year return, and many of these investments we're talking about are much longer than a three-year horizon, that three-year average is 7.66%. The five-year average is 9.42%. So again, we're talking about a limited amount of the city's or the county's cash and other assets held for long term in a 15% of that amount held for a longer term, and the markets generally do perform, but this is not without risk, I have to say. This is certainly a risk option that would have to be considered in the investment strategies of cities and counties.
Thank you. Now, I would like to apologize to Representative Kosnick. I know he wasn't finished, but for time, we just are allowed two questions. I'm going to let Representative Freiberg close, and then if we bring this bill, if we need to have further conversation, it's being laid over now. There'll be opportunity for us to continue to speak with Representative Freiberg. So, Representative Freiberg, will you please have closing remarks, and then we'll end our meeting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is, I think the 2017 law has worked well. This would expand that law to a few cities that we know to be on strong financial footing. So I appreciate your hearing the bill and hope we can continue a discussion on it to ultimately move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, and I appreciate your willingness to let us lay this over so we can continue conversations so that all concerns are addressed. And with that, members, we've concluded our business for today. We are adjourned.